episode of the podcast. I was thinking this week I have been house sitting for a couple of dogs, and I'm taking them hiking down in this really gorgeous area that has an arroyo. And for those of you with pets, I'm not sure if you actually have to walk them at 7 in the morning. There have been some days I've started at 6:30. But that time of day when, you know, the day is just beginning, I was just walking down this arroyo, plunging through the sand, and I just stopped for a minute and I closed my eyes, and all I could hear were just crickets, cicadas. They were so loud, there was no other sound in the world. And I thought, what a beautiful miracle. You know, I love summer, I love the warm weather, I love being able to wear a sundress, go out and do fun things. But the beginning of every day begins for me with those cicadas, those crickets. It was just such a powerful and gorgeous moment. I wanted to share it with you. And so, dear listeners, I urge you to take time out of every day, sit back, and try to figure out something that's been magical during the day, or something that's just slightly miraculous. I think if we all did that every day, I know I would be a little less grumpy. Not sure about you, but I know I would. My guest this week, Robert Kuhn, he's a little bit of everything. He's a surfer, he's a musician, he's a writer, but one thing he absolutely is a storyteller. His book, Leaving is Returning, is an autobiographical kind of story or sketch about what happened when he left home and had a whole bunch of revelations and adventures in South America. I'm going to provide a link to it on the treasures page of the website. And then, at the very end of this episode, the song, Robert's song with his band Galveston, Low Way. I hope you all love it and dance to it just like I did. Robert was a thrill to interview because he just tells stories like nobody's business. And I really love those kinds of interviews where I really have to say nothing and the guest kind of just is on a roll. So now, episode 123 of Bite-Sized Blessings.
And we start walking and feeling like we're on top of the world now. You know, we've got our guitars and little hand drums and the flutes and stuff around our back. And we're walking down the road and feeling really good. And there's a little house on the side of the road that's like it's raised. You know, it was a two-story house, or it was on stilts or something. And it was up on some rocks above the road. But there's a little light on or candle or something burning in the house, and we're walking and we hear there's three women in the house, and they call to us and they're like, "Hey, we've been waiting for you." We're like, "What?" You know, we didn't really understand what this is. These three old women, and they're like, "Yeah, they're having some kind of like ceremony or something like that up there." And we're like, "What?" They're like, "Yeah, we've been waiting for you. We knew you were going to come." And we're like, "What? This is like the weirdest, craziest thing." We didn't really understand it, but she's like, "Yeah, sing us a song."
You as a human being, if you had to go to a party or a conference or introduce yourself to a group of people, how do you self-define? Like, how do you describe who you are as a person?
Well, that's a really good question. I'll try to not think about it too much and say the first words that come into my mind. I would say I'm a writer. I write lots of different things, songs, poems, books, journals. So often we like, who are we, gets tied into our occupations or something like that, or our careers, I feel like. And whether that's right or not, that's still the first thing that, because I mean, I'm more than a writer. I'm a father. I'm a friend. I'm a husband. I'm a musician, a spirit, whatever, you know, all those kind of things that's on my path. But I can put myself where I'm at right now has to be somewhat tied to my work right now. And my work as long as I've really known myself, I know has been being centered around writing. And I wish there was more that I could really kind of sum myself up with some kind of words, but my writing has taken me all over the world. It's taken all kinds of different forms, but I feel like that's the way I really can express myself best. Yeah, I'd say I'm a writer that's been around and keeps going around.
And you're a writer who lives near a beach, because I have to say your Instagram photos are amazing. And you just seem to have this idyllic life by the beach. Yeah, seriously.
Now I'm just really blessed to live in a really great spot. It's right across the street from the beach. And I've been a surfer for quite a while. So being right across the street from the beach, I have a unique way of being able to show everybody that wants to know what the waves are doing. And I know there's been times in my life I've lived far from the beach, wondering, well, what's the ocean doing? What are the surf's doing? Should I go surfing? There have been a lot of times when I've lived, you know, an hour away from the beach, and I've been like, well, I think of looking at the forecast or whatever, what the wind's doing or something, and maybe it's going to be good. And I'll drive down and it's like terrible. I'm like, ah, oh, I wish I wouldn't have drove. Or sometimes you don't know. And I said, oh, I'll get a call from my brother or a call from somebody, and they'll say, oh, the surf was great today. And I didn't even know I missed it. So I kind of like just do that. There used to be a little website in Galveston that you could like look, and it was free, and you could see what the waves are doing, or would tell what the, but that went away a while ago. So I just kind of took that on myself. I was like, well, and it kind of started during the pandemic, because I don't know why, that was just like a little thing I thought I'd do, just connect with people, because I wasn't seeing anybody. And I was like, well, just like let everybody know what the surf's doing. And that's my little surf report. I just give a little surf report every morning, and that's what it is. And sometimes there's waves, sometimes there's not waves. And I just figure I'd let people know. But it's turning into a real nice thing. I get messages really every day from people thanking me for doing that, that they appreciate it, that they, for, and the, really the truth is, a lot of people aren't even surfers that watch it. They just kind of feel like I'm just talking to them or something like that. And they just like to have a little moment of peace with the ocean. And I do too. So that's kind of just what I do. I just kind of let people know what it's doing.
I have two questions. What is the hairiest wave you've ever surfed? And then have you seen, I read a recent article, I can't remember if it's Smithsonian magazine or one of my science magazines, about the craziest surfing wave in the world that's also the most dangerous off the coast of Portugal. Do you know about that wave?
Oh, Nazarene or something like that. Nazarat or something. Yeah, I've heard of that. I've never been there. But I've seen pictures of it and I've seen videos of it, and that is crazy. And one day I want to go to Portugal. That's like on the bucket list, is to go to Portugal. But I'm not a big, huge wave surfer. I'm from Galveston, and Galveston has these little longboard, chill little waves just to go get wet. But sometimes they get pretty big, you know, when a hurricane comes or something. But I've been, the hairiest wave I've ever surfed is in Puerto Escondido, Mexico, in Oaxaca. And that's called the Mexican Pipeline. And my music had carried me down there a couple times. And it is a big, scary, crazy wave that I've been in a couple times. And that's really the only really big wave that I've been in. But it's actual, like, proper tube, you know, where you're like, oh my God, I'm in a tube. And then, brrr, and then you just get, like, slammed and, like, twisted up and end up on the bottom and, like, fighting for air to get up. And, oh my God. And then another wave comes in. But, yeah, it's a legit wave. And that's the biggest, craziest wave I've been in. And, was the Mexican Pipeline in Puerto Escondido, yeah.
Okay, so let me ask, do you surf before the hurricane or after?
Really, it's before the hurricane really hits. The best is when there's a hurricane, like, somewhere kind of far away, even, like, out in Florida or you know, somewhere out there in the, somewhere away, or you start to get what's called groundswell. And that big churning force of energy starts to push waves, big beautiful waves, into where we are, because we face out towards the southeast. So you get a lot of the waves that come from there, and as soon as a big system like that comes in the Gulf, it starts pushing waves our way, and those are the big pretty waves that everybody really likes to see. So, and the closer it gets, the bigger the waves. But then, of course, when it actually does hit, you don't want to be anywhere around, because it gets, everything's gets to be a big, huge mess, you know. But people love it when surf hurricanes start to come in. But it's a real fine line between, like, the beautiful waves, and then like danger, let's get out of here, you know?
Let me ask you, did you grow up in a religious household? What did that look like for you as a kiddo?
No, not really. A little bit religious, I guess. My parents always took us to church when we were growing up. We're Presbyterians, and there was a church not far from our home that we'd go to like Sunday mornings. And we did say our prayers every night. Yeah, when I was a little kid, my sister, I have a twin sister and a little brother. And when my parents were putting us to bed every night, we'd go into my sister's room or wherever room and say our little prayers. It was a little bit of a religious household. I think it was mostly just kind of when we were growing up, they kind of had that for us to kind of just to show us that side of life. And so it was a little bit of religious. And my father, I guess, was kind of religious too. He doesn't seem really religious. Like he doesn't like tell anybody about anything, but I know when I was born, kind of blue and not breathing and like kind of practically almost dead, more dead than alive when I was born. And they had to rush me into like an incubator and like put me on all the tubes and machines. And the doctors were like, well, if he lives, he's not going to be like a normal kid or anything like that. He's going to have serious developmental problems and stuff. And then my dad was, he's like really made a deal with, God, if you let Robert live and come out of this, okay, I'll read the Bible every day. And so he did. And he still reads the Bible every single day. From that day, he wasn't like a Bible person or anything, but he started reading the Bible then and read the Bible every day and continues to read the Bible every single morning. I'm not going to get into his circumstances when he's reading the Bible, but every single morning he takes his little Bible time. So I think I'm sure that like influenced, that kind of thing. So yeah, I guess we were kind of religious, I guess.
It's so interesting how many people that I talk to for the podcast end up kind of, they get to that inflection point where something really terrible is about to happen and they make a deal.
Right. I think it's easier. Or like, yeah, please just get me out of this. I'll do anything.
Yes. And it's, and pretty much everyone I've talked with, they follow through on the deal. They don't, backpedal and they kind of stay true to it, at least. I mean, I know there's probably a lot of backpedaling among humans all over the world after you make that kind of deal, but most of them that I've talked to, they kind of stay with it because it's been such a serious occasion, So kudos to your dad for following through.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I think, and he's been through the Bible, I don't know how many times, but he's read through it and he's got probably little favorite parts of it and stuff, I guess, that he likes more. But, that's probably good, little balancing kind of, a lot of little jewels in there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm just, for my own curiosity's sake, do you find that surfing kind of gets you closer to what some would term that word God or creation? Or is it more just something to blow off the stress or have fun? How do you experience that?
I mean, all of the above, really. It's a connection with nature, a connection with something that's so much bigger than ourselves. It's a huge force of energy that's like moving infinitely. And so it's a connection with the universe, really. Water is something that's just so magical and everything too. What's going on inside the molecules of water is a magical thing, is just an incredible thing. And I think there's no like really secret why, it's plays such a huge part in like religious ceremonies and things all over the world in all cultures. It's life and it's connected with life, and the ocean, it has like a spiritual quality to it in itself, just the vastness of it. You have to feel it, the infinity of it. It feels just so huge and infinite, and you're immersed in it and you're a part of it. So I feel like that's definitely, and I know every time I go in the water and I go in the ocean, I always just say thank you. And who is it I'm talking to or what, I don't know. But I always like, and that always feels good to say it too. And I'm not sure, I know where I picked that up. Someone told me it one time and I just started, but it feels really good to say, and I do that every single time I get in the water. I just say thank you, whether it's the ocean or a river, or if I'm traveling in Colorado or New Mexico or New England or something like that. I wake up in the morning and we'll find if I'm not around the ocean, I'll find a river or something like that, and definitely express a little bit of gratitude towards it.
I just read an article this morning in Cornwall. There was a huge beach party that started in the morning, and this apparently someone drove their BMW onto the beach because you can drive on the beach, left it to like go party, came back, and his car was like drifting away into the ocean.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
They had to call the Coast Guard.
They got the BMW.
Yes. Somehow. The Coast Guard did respond, and somehow they, you know, because it's, I mean, talk about polluting. They're not going to let the car just fall to the bottom of the ocean. Right. And they had to tow the car out. And, you know, apparently the gentleman whose car it was super bummed out and sad. But then all the locals said, okay, why would you park there? What's wrong with you? Don't you know about the ocean? And clearly he didn't.
Didn't know. Yeah. You know? One time in my life, that kind of reminds me of a story. I spent, I don't know how much you know about me really, but I lived a good part of my life in Central America, and I was a fisherman for probably 7 years or something. I lived in Nicaragua and was a fisherman there and in other places too, but really that's where I had a home and everything there. And one night I was out fishing with a partner, and we went up the beach a ways out the channel and out into the ocean, and went up the coast to where there was like a little lagoon, and this little lagoon, there was like an inlet. It kind of looked like a river that went where the water went into the ocean. And we went and set our nets up in the lagoon. There's all kinds of mosquitoes, everything. You don't want to like sleep in there. So we'd set the nets, and then we'd come out back out to the beach where we had a little camp set up, and we pulled the boat up on the beach far as we could. It seemed like it was fine and everything. It was pretty far up on the beach, and we went to sleep in our little tent, and it was already midnight or something by the time we'd like went to sleep, and we're gonna go check the nets early in the morning before day. And we woke up, and we are miles and miles and miles away from anything. We're way up, and then we sailed the boat up the coast and everything like that, and got out of the tent, and the tides had come up in the night and took the boat. And that was my partner. He was an old man. He was an old fisherman that had been fishing for his whole life there. And I was freaking out. I'm ready to quit. I'm had enough of this fishing life. I'm going back to Texas. You know, I'm going to get back on my things and go. Now I've lost my boat. When you're a fisherman and living on the coast like that, your boat is like your life. You know, that's everything is, you know, you travel with it. There was no roads in this little town. It was all boats, and you fish, you work, you go to get, you haul things, you carry people, everything's your boat, you know? And so I started just kind of, and he said, don't worry, we're going to find the boat. And there's two things that could have happened. One, it could have been an incoming, it could have gone up in the river, or it could have gone out to sea. Cause we were kind of on the edge of this, like, this kind of river that went into the ocean. And when the tide was coming in, it would go up into the lagoon system. And when the tide was going out, everything would go out. So there wasn't much we could do if it went out. So we started following. He said, well, let's go. And he knew some like little deer trails that went through the bush and the mangrove and the swamps and the jungles. And we're swinging machetes and chopping through. And finally come to like a little clearing. And he's like, look, there's the boat down there. And it was up in this lagoon way back in there. So we're still a long ways away from where we could see it. So then we had to like go. And finally we went and got the boat And by this time, it's like big morning, the sun's up high and everything. And we get to our nets and throw the nets. And there's a ton of fish that are all rotten in the nets and eaten by. And we lost a lot of fish, but a lot of fish were still good. So we took up the nets and got out of there. But, you know, it was just like a crazy day. But this reminded me of that. It wasn't a BMW. It was a little paddle dory sailboat, you know, that was handmade and goes to Nicaragua, but it was still my life, you know. So I know how it goes. I know that dude was feeling.
Thank God you were with someone who knew the lay of the land and was an old salt.
Yes. Thank goodness. He was an old salt, and man, he was my partner, Mr. Weinstein. Yeah, Mr. Weinstein. And he knew a lot of things and showed me so much about life down there.
That is the coolest story. I love it so much. I feel like there's a short story in that somewhere, like somewhere between like Apocalypse Now and The Old Man and the Sea. You have to marry those two. Those two can be married, and that's like your story right there.
Yeah, right.
I would love to hear any stories of miracles or magic that you would like to share.
Anything? Okay, I remember you told me that this was going to be one of the questions. So I have kind of thought about this a little bit, especially today I thought about it. And until right now, I kind of had an idea of what I was going to talk about. And then you were saying some other stuff. So I'm going to tell you a couple stories. One, the first that came in my head just now when you were talking about somebody who was getting lost in the woods. So kind of a similar situation where I was living in the same place in Nicaragua then. And I was in the bush looking for, I don't know what I was looking for, coconuts. I was looking for coconuts. That's what I was doing. Coconuts are like a big part of life down there. Everyone makes oil to cook with, and there's like abundant coconuts if you know where to go look for them at. So I took my boat over to the beach where there were a lot of coconuts at. And I'm walking through the woods, through the jungle, through the bush, picking up coconuts, husking them, getting them. And somehow I got lost in the bush, in the jungle, in these like crazy backwoods. And I could not find my way out. And, you know, I'm living in indigenous villages. These are indigenous villages in Nicaragua that I'm living in. And they have all kinds of superstitions and like beliefs of obia. They call it obia. You know, it's like the voodoo, the spirit world and stuff like that. And they said, I remember this one old man told me, it was like kind of a common thing. I was friends with a lot of like old men and stuff down there because they all tell you old stories and stuff. They said, you know, it was like one time he says, if you ever get lost in the bush, he's like, what happens? There's little spirits, there's little evil spirits in the jungle that will make you lost. And they'll get you lost out there and you won't be able to find your way. Even you can be like on the right path or something, but you'll just get turned around and won't be able to find. And somehow this happened to me, and I'd been living there for years. I knew my way around, but I could not find my way out of this bush. For hours, I'm walking around, I'm climbing trees, like trying to see if I can like see a landmark or anything out there, and nothing. I cannot find my way. And I was on like a trail, but I couldn't find left from right out there. I was just lost in the jungle. And I remember someone told me, they said, and I always heard these like little superstition things and thought, oh, whatever, you know, I don't think too much of it. But they said, if you ever get lost out there in the bush, you take off your shirt and turn it on inside out and put your shirt back on and then you'll find your way. And I was like ready to try anything by then, you know. I'm like, yeah, okay. So I took my shirt off and I put it on back inside out and found my way. And I'll tell you what, if immediately did I find the right trail and found my way out of there. And I made it home before nighttime. And it was like, and I always thought that was just the bunch of superstitions, whatever. But that moment I tried it and it really worked. And I found my way out of that bush. And I don't know what it was, but I did. And that's real. That happened. When you asked me that question before, you said, okay, well, I'm going to ask you a question about anything kind of miraculous or magical that happened. And what the first thing that kind of came to my head, first I had to think about, I was like, I don't know if anything ever really is like that's happened to me, but there was one time So I spent about 10 years of my life living in South and Central America, and I was living in Chile for about a year, and I was got into all kinds of interesting occupations and work and stuff, but I've always been a musician. I've always been a writer. I've always been doing that on my path, wherever I've been. And I always traveled with a guitar. Everywhere I traveled to, I always traveled with a guitar. And I had a little partner that was a real special person when I lived in Chile. And he this is also an indigenous village in Chile in South America. And we would, had all kinds of things we do, jobs, but we had a little band, me and him and another guy, we had a little band, and we'd go to this one of the villages that wasn't far from there. There was kind of like a, I wouldn't go so far as to say it was a tourist village, but it was a town where on the weekends, everybody would come to from like all the villages around. And sometimes people would come from like the city that was several hours away. People would come there because it was called the Pisco de Elqui, and it was in North Central Chile. And they had like some restaurants, they had some bars, they had a couple little hotel type things and a beautiful plaza, but there was work for musicians there on the weekends. Really, that's what it came down to. So we would work in the grape fields a lot during the week. And on the weekends, we'd go to this little town and play music. And we had relationships, a lot of the bars and a lot of the restaurants and hotels that would let us come. And what we'd do is like go to one and play our little three songs, you know, we'd play them together, and then we'd go to the next one and then play the next play there. And you do it about like five or six different places, and you pass your hat around, and the place would usually give you some food, maybe give you a drink or something like that. And you pass your hat around and make a little money. It was pretty good. We did it regularly, and it was pretty good. But this one day we went to do it, and it was terrible. We made like no money. There was like, I don't know, there wasn't people around, and one of the places didn't want us to come play. It was just like a really, really bad day. And we hustled around all day, and by the end of the day, we didn't have any money. We probably spent more money than we made. It was just a, you know, when you go fishing or when you go, sometimes you have good days. When you go like playing music, same thing. Sometimes you have good days and sometimes you have not so good days. Well, this is one of the not so good days, and night came, and also, there was a place that somebody usually let us stay at their house when we'd come there, because the village was a good distance away. We didn't have cars or anything. It was all like hitchhiking and stuff. So it really depended on rides or people, and because it was probably 30 miles away from the village where we lived to get to this village where the music was happening at. But this one day, the people weren't there where we could spend the night at, and it got to be nighttime, and we didn't have a ride out of there. It was getting cold. We went out to the highway to just go try to catch a ride to get back home to our little place where we lived. We got on the highway and no cars are picking us up. You know, it starts getting colder and colder, and it's really hard to hitchhike at night. I don't know if you've ever hitchhiked before, but at nighttime, it's much more difficult to hitchhike than during the daytime, especially if it's not like a place that's all lit up and everything. We're on like a relatively pretty small village in North Central Chile, and we're on the side of the road waiting for a ride, and nobody's picking us up, and we're coming to all kinds of conclusions about, oh man, we got to change our lives, you know, kind of like same thing with the fishing boat. We have to make changes in this crazy musician life, this crazy traveler life's not good. We need to, like, you know, got to get jobs, we need to go get jobs, you know, we need to move to the city, we need to, like, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh man, you know, don't say that. We don't need to go get jobs and move to the city. We're going to be fine, you know. And it gets a little later, a little colder, we're a little hungrier, and man, it's true. We really need to get, something's going to happen. And then all of a sudden a car pulls up out of the darkness, a pickup truck, and like, see, I told you, man, it's going to be all right. You know, and we jump in the back of the truck, and the truck gives us a ride down the road, and probably takes us like a good 20 miles or something down the road. And then he stops and he's got to turn off, go to this little farm or something. And we got to get out of the car, but we're all rejuvenated and feeling like good now, you know, like, oh my God, it was like a miracle. You know, it really felt like a miracle that this little thing happened, that we got a ride this night. Cause there was like, we were going to be just sleeping out in the cold. It's kind of like Santa Fe, this little village north. It's real arid. The climate's kind of like that. It gets cold in the nighttime, the daytime, the sun comes out, it gets warm. You know what I mean? The region's kind of like that. But so we get dropped off and now we're still probably a good like 10 miles away from home and it's the middle of the night, but at least 10 miles is not 30 miles. You know, we could walk 10 miles, it's going to be take us a long time, but we'll get home, you know? And we start walking and feeling like we're on top of the world now, you know, we've got our guitars and little hand drums and the flutes and stuff around our back. And we're walking down the road and feeling really good. And there's a little house on the side of the road that's like it's raised, you know, it was a two-story house or it was on stilts or something. And it was up on some rocks above the road. But there's a little light on or candle or something burning in the house. And we're walking and we hear there's three women in the house and they call to us and they're like, "Hey, we've been waiting for you." We're like, "What?" You know, we didn't really understand what this is. These three old women. And they're like, "Yeah, they're having some kind of like ceremony or something like that up there." And we're like, "What?" They're like, "Yeah, we've been waiting for you. We knew you were going to come." And we're like, "What? This is like the weirdest, craziest thing." We didn't really understand it, but she's like, "Yeah, sing us a song." And my friend, and it was the two of us that were together at this time. And Raul Chidiwe, he said, and he took his guitar and he sang this like beautiful song. It was just like the perfect song for that moment right then. I can't even explain it. It was a song that I never even heard him play before. It wasn't like one of the ones we did or anything, but it was like the perfect, perfect song for that. And these women came down and they were just crying. They were crying, so moved. And they're like, "Oh my gosh, this was like what we need, what we're waiting for. You don't understand what we do to help you." You know what I mean? And they brought us all this food and like brought us some wine and fed us and took care of us. And like, it was just like the most beautiful, like in the middle of the night, in the middle of this deserted highway, this like crazy thing happened, but it like really filled us with like energy and like sent us on our way. And we started walking and nothing could like slow us down after that. And we made it home by morning. And we didn't make it home, but we made it to some friends' houses that were in the village, like closer than our place. But it was like we made it to a safe place where we could stay for a couple of days if we wanted to. And it was just like the most. And when you ask me for like some kind of like miraculous little thing or something like that, that's what really like came to my head. I was like, yeah, that one time when we were in Chile, and I didn't really understand why it was like a miracle or why it was anything, but you could feel it. You know what I mean? It was like the special little thing that happened that night that kind of just kept us warm and kept you going through the darkness and through like the cold and through anything. And I sometimes just kind of will go back to that to kind of pick me up and like remind me that, you know, you can do this and just keep going and keep doing your thing and that there is something there to it. That was a long time ago and that was a long different way of playing music, but the same thing, you know, it's the same music. And that's the same way I travel now. Now I like have like shows booked and play proper, you know, that kind of thing and tours and stuff, but it's the same, you know, it's that ancient like little magic that comes with this music thing with it that we're doing.
Did you ask how they knew you were on your way or that you had an appointment to keep?
No. I don't think we even really asked anything about it. It was just like such a joyous like thing full of like, you know, we didn't ask, but what we understood, we knew, because they just like the same way that we needed them or like we like knew something was going to happen. I was like, you know, like just wait, something's going to happen. And we didn't know what was going to happen, but something happened and that was what happened, you know, because that's what it was like, just wait, something's going to happen. That's what I remember I kept saying. And something did happen because something always pretty much almost always something. And that's the thing, when you get into these like really hard situations where you're at the mercy of the world, that's when things can happen because you're open to it, you know, you're open to anything happening and that's when they happen. And pretty much always, maybe except for one time, so that, you know, and we haven't seen that one time yet, you know, but just about every time something will happen like that when you're at the mercy of the world in this open road and this open, free, directionless space that you need something. It's amazing what can happen then.
No, Adam. absolutely. And I think it's almost like there was this preordained meeting between you and your friend and these three elderly women who were doing a ceremony. I mean, it's actually fascinating. It's the middle of the night. Y'all got a ride for 20 miles. And then the guy drops you off so that you could make this appointment with these women to sing this song that makes them all cry. But they already knew you were going to show up anyway. I mean, it's fascinating. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, you know, it was. It seems like a dream, but it was real, you know? It was just a really amazing little thing that happens out there. You know, there's things that I'm sure when you've done these, you've talked to, I don't know how many hundreds of people, but there is something out there that can happen if you're open to it. You know, you just have to be open to it. And so a lot of times you have to be at that bottom where you need it, you know?
That's totally true. And it's, yes, how many people have interviewed? I've interviewed about 130 people. But as I said, everybody has a different kind of idea of what a miracle or magic looks like. But I love that story because it's so mystical. And it also, it seems to happen in this boundary state where you were lost, but you also knew where you were. So there's this, you were lost because everything had gone so badly and nothing had kind of turned out the way you expected it to that day. And so, which was such an anomaly for you. And then, you know, while everything's going sideways and you're walking home in the middle of the night, there's this really gorgeous reminder of connectedness and beauty and how we all can show up for each other. You know, I mean, it's just fascinating to me. Your story is fascinating.
Yeah, it was a real special little special moment of my life, really, looking back on it now, because I don't think about it very often. But right now, like just telling it reminds me also, you know, and I've gone so far since then, but it's still the same, you know. Cultures and every single culture in the world, there is like a rite of passage that young men and women can opt into. You can take this passage and you can leave, you know, and learn to find. And when you leave the comfort of your community where you've grown and what you're expected to do and what you're provided, a life that's been provided to you. When you leave that and you go out into the open, into the vast, whatever it is out there, you know, where you're not comfort, where you don't know what you're doing, where you don't know where you're going, you have to find a way, or else you're going to just have to go back home. And if you stay gone for long enough, you know, 6 months or a year or 10 years, however long it is, you know, but I think that's a rite of passage to learn to find your own way. And on that path, then you are given your true self. I feel like, you know, what you're supposed to be doing. And it's a little, there's some magic there. And that's why all these cultures have this like rite of passage where people are driven out of the community and the say, you know, and all in these indigenous cultures, young people, young men, young women, they're forced to leave the comforts of their community to learn to fend for themselves for a little bit, you know, and that's where you find that. So I definitely feel like I definitely made a decision. And there was a point where I know I could have gone to be a corporate job person like everybody else. And there was a moment in my life that I made a choice, said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go this way and I'm going to figure it out. Been a rocky road, but I'm still here.
I'm glad that you added that it's been a rocky road because, you know, when you make that decision, if you do make a decision to leave the comfort of family, of home, of everything that's familiar, once you make that decision and you go out into the world, which you're right, our society, we really have very few, and I'm talking about American culture, we really have very few opportunities for young adults to consciously and intentionally kind of have that initiation ceremony to where they're out on their own and they can they can do things on their own and they learn a lot. But it is a rocky road, and it is not easy, and it's going to maybe suck a lot. And you might go through depression, or you might go through grief, or you might go through, you know, who knows what it looks like, because it's different for every person. But that, and I'm speaking from experience, because when I moved to Santa Fe, it was not, you know, this, I didn't tell anyone, but I was like, why did I do this? Why am I here? And it was so lonely and so hard. And I probably cried every day for 6 months. But it was what was needed to kind of, it was a catharsis. Something was happening and changing me. And because I made those decisions to change my life, to put myself in uncomfortable positions, every single thing has changed for the better. But you do have to go through a period of suck. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely have to go through a period of suck, you know, but that's how you get strong, you know, that's how you get strong and learn to do things and not be dependent on whatever culture is, you know. That's strength. That's where you get the strength from, you know, the strength that you can do it and you can do anything. That's where you understand, you learn that you can do anything.
Try to make this quick so that we don't miss any more of Robert's music than we need to. Thanks so much for listening to this episode and to my interview with Robert Kuhn. Again, you can find his book on the Treasures page of the website, and there will be a link to his Spotify under the episode's show notes. I need to thank Robert for being such a gracious guest and for sharing all of his stories. And I need to also thank the creators of the music used in this episode. Of course, Robert and his band Galveston, but also Edvardis Sen, Kevin McLeod, Music L Files, Stephen O'Brien, Sasha End, Philip Rice, and Justin Allen Arnold. For complete attribution, please see the Bite Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Robert. Yes, you're going to get lost in this life. Yes, you're going to find times where you don't know where you are, but always have faith that you'll be found, whether it's by turning your t-shirt inside out or simply by meeting three unusual women by the side of the road. Always know that you're going to be exactly where you're supposed to be. So be like Robert. Get lost, and then have the faith that you'll be found. Now and then I see her face, it takes me away up to some place where everything is out of space and
Heaven is a song in key. Darkness makes the light go shine. Sycamore tree and rainbow wine. Taking a look.